your age is really when you need to be thinking about it. Whatever age you start to take it on as you're listening to this, if that's right now, great. But the sooner, the better. But now is fantastic, right? Now is perfect.
Welcome to Discovering Nutrition with Chronometer. I'm your host and community marketing manager, Elisa. And today I am truly overjoyed to sit down with our very special guest, JJ Virgin. JJ is a triple board certified nutrition expert and a fitness hall of famer. She is a passionate advocate of nutrition's healing power and is mission driven to ignite a movement of women choosing to age powerfully. After decades of watching women strive to shrink themselves, JJ is urging women to step into their power, physically and personally. Using her principles of powerful aging, she inspires women to get strong, get bold, and get what they want in life. She embodies her philosophy as both a legendary personal trainer and the founder of two multi-million dollar businesses, both her personal brand and the Mindshare Collaborative, which is the most influential professional community in health. Having propelled more New York Times bestsellers, PBS specials, and seven-figure brands than any other community. JJ is a prominent TV and media personality who co-hosted TLC's Freaky Eaters and was a nutrition expert for Dr. Phil's weight loss challenges. She's made numerous appearances on PBS, Dr. Oz, Rachel Ray, Access Hollywood, and The Today Show. In this episode, we sit down with JJ to discuss aging powerfully, her love of the Chronometer app, and how it even helped her husband lose 27 pounds. As always, this podcast is for general purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including getting medical advice. The use of information from this podcast is at the user's own risk and is not to be substituted for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. I truly can't wait for this one. Let's dive in. First of all, thank you so much for being here. We're absolutely stoked to have someone who is as knowledgeable as you are. If you could share for our listeners a little bit about your background and how you specifically got into the world of health and nutrition.
Cool. And I must say, I am obsessed with this app.
Yay. We love hearing that.
Use it, recommend it, and I'll share some great stories of success with it. I have actually always been into the health and wellness thing before it was a thing and before we actually had an industry. So it has been very fun because I've kind of grown up in the industry. I grew up in Berkeley, California, where I think a lot of the health foods and organics and all that started. And I went off to UCLA as a theater major, and I was paying my way through college teaching aerobics way back when. This is literally in the days of leg warmers. You don't know what those are.
Probably. I do. I'm a child of the 80s. I do.
So, I was literally went to UCLA in the 80s and leg warmers a whole bit, teaching aerobics, the movie Perfect comes out, all that. And someone wanted me to come to their house to teach aerobics for them at their house because, this is Beverly Hills and why not? So I go over there. And as far as I can tell, Mark Sisson's a longtime friend. And we were talking about it the other day, and we think that me, Mark Sisson, Tony Horton, Body by Jake were probably the first personal trainers. And so that I graduated from UCLA, kind of realized midpoint through that everyone who was a theater major was talking about becoming a waitress. And I thought, well, this is a dumb thing to do for college. So I became an English major. And the day after I graduated, I went into grad school in exercise science. And then doctoral school in exercise science, then decided I really wanted to study nutrition. And so I've just always been obsessed with the fitness, nutrition, wellness industry. And it's been just a wild ride to see all the shifts that have gone on over the years. But I'll tell you what, way back when, in college, as I was paying my way through college doing this, I made people write down what they were eating on a piece of paper. And then we got phones and I could start to have them, this was pre-pictures, but they could send me an email with what they were eating. Then they could send me a text. It's just gotten so much better and better and better to be able to track this. It's so much easier than the journal pages I used to get.
I actually, believe it or not, in high school was same thing, pen and paper, and I would write down everything. I didn't know a thing about macronutrients, let alone micronutrients. I was strictly tracking calories. The amount of education that is served about nutrition, I'm sure you can empathize with this, is woeful. There's nothing. So I was exclusively tracking calories, eating like less than 900, working. Mm-hmm. I worked at the gym, would work out for 3 hours a day, exclusively cardio, because heaven forbid I get bulky. Heaven forbid I get bulky. And that's where my story began as well. So kind of similar in terms of just like always been deeply fascinated. I don't know. I have many of my peers at like 16, 17 were tracking nutrition.
But I know I started tracking, well, because I was in theater school in San Francisco and in dance class. And so I was very, very obsessed with how do I perform better? And that's where it came from. And so, yes, I was tracking everything. And then I went to a modeling agency and they told me I needed to lose 20 pounds, which was ridiculous. And I tracked everything. I wanted to see if I could eat 500 calories a day, you know? So yes, those terrible things that make you very sick early on and you learn better. But yes, it's been a fun ride. And the tools that we have available now are incredible. Mm-hmm. It's just so much easier for people to have success, because I believe that the first place that we start with success is through understanding our current situation. Like, we have to start from what's our starting point. And that's where I use your app in that way to start, where I just have people do an audit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all you do to start. You do not make any changes. Now, we know from research that if all someone did was track what they were eating, they make changes because they're like, whoa, right? Mm-hmm. What is it? People underestimate what they eat somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 40%. So just by tracking alone, people are going, oh, I had no idea. So that alone will change behavior, but it helps me start to see what really is going on and what are your maintenance calories.
How do you determine that for somebody?
Well, so the first part again is let's just record what you're eating for a week. Now, I'm actually doing this with someone right now who is morbidly obese. And I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of morbidly obese people over the years on a lot of different reality TV shows. And so, you know, the first place I started was just tracking. But what's interesting is just with tracking alone, he has already lost 4 pounds in basically like 4 days just by tracking. And I'm just tracking because I want to understand habits and see where things are. And then I start to make shifts in real time. But what I want to get to is, okay, let's track and see what your maintenance calories are. Obviously, he's already making shifts, so we're not going to be there. But if you take the average person, you say, just this first week, just get curious. Let's just write down let's just put it in the app, see what you eat, see how many calories it is, just to maintain your weight. That's when you get that really great picture of a trend over a week. Again, even when I'm looking at bioimpedance scales, when I'm looking at apps, I'm looking for trends over time, not what one day tells us, because one day is not useful, right? So if I can't do that with an app because they're just going to change right away, then I'm going to try to do the next best, which would be to go get a breath test, like to do a DEXA scan and a breath test, and then put that together with how much they move each day. And there's a formula kind of like depending on if you're sedentary all the way up to like a big athlete. And so I'll do it that way. But if I can get it through an app, that's such a better indicator, right?
Yeah. For me, my exercise is very variable. And so it took me a long time to like nail that down. And I think one of the things that I've noticed, and it is getting a little bit better, but is people just need instantaneous results. We are very like, we want something, we want it yesterday. And it took me a long time to actually like peg down because my exercise is so variable, like my maintenance calories. But let me tell you, I eat 2,300 calories at maintenance, which is so far from, you know, the 800 I was restricting myself to as a teenager. And I just feel so, so great. And it does come down to learning your body. So I think it's amazing that that's your starting point and getting people to understand, because then it gives everyone a baseline. Like, that is the number one baseline. I agree.
Yeah, that. And I want to know your body composition. And I will tell you, back in the 80s, I literally would bring skinfold calipers, because we did not have bioimpedance scales then. When I was in doctoral school, we spent a semester validating different body composition tests, everything from underwater weighing, which is horrific, you know, we didn't do DEXAs back then, but skin folds, all different sites, tape measures. And so for years, I was doing tape measure and skin fold. And it's so much easier now when you can send someone to go get a DEXA scan to see not just their body fat, but where that body fat is, how much visceral adipose tissue, the bad fat they have, and then their skeletal muscle mass and how much they have, how much relative to their age and their sex compared to everybody else, and then is it symmetrical? But then I take them and have them get a bioimpedance scale for home so they can correlate it. Mm-hmm. And what I love to see, just as basics, is, you know, that body composition, their macronutrients, like what they typically eat, how many calories, and where are they coming from, and when are they eating? And then also just how active they are on an average, right? Like the current person I'm working with, and it turns out this is actually pretty normal, that the average American, this will blow your mind maybe, gets between 3,000 and 4,000 steps a day. That is it.
That is mind-blowing.
I know, it's mind-blowing. So the person I'm working with now, I said, all right, he was at 3,000, 2,500 to 3,000. I go, let's get to four. Mm-hmm. Let's just get to four, you know, and we will just, now we're going to five, you know, we're just creeping these things in and making some shifts in real time. And, you know, really, I like to focus on the biggest things that make a difference first. And once you have that app and you really see what you're eating and when you're eating it and how much you're eating, gosh, you can make some little shifts that make huge impacts.
I agree. One of the things that I've noticed too, because I am a religious tracker, I obviously work for a nutrition tracking app, but I also track my nutrition religiously to a fault, in terms of a lot of people, they have a bad day and they throw in the towel. They're like, I'm not going to track anymore. And I always think that they're doing themselves a big disservice. Sometimes I will overconsume. I will be in a caloric surplus, and I'm unapologetic about it now, because it's knowledge. Then you can look back and be like, I didn't get a lot of sleep the night before, or that kind of thing. Like, tracking is what you make it, I think. It sounds like you're encouraging your clients to do the right thing, because if you're only tracking the good days, and I say good loosely, then you're not getting the feedback that you need either. And I think like establishing a baseline, what you normally eat. I've been surprised sometimes what I've been like, I just ate 3,800 calories because I'm tracking. And that awareness goes so far with me. And I think that chronometer for me, I'll be like, okay, you've eaten way more than you thought you'd eat today. That's okay. No problem. But then like, what are you going to do tomorrow? And then just having the knowledge, because I weigh everything, which might seem extreme, but I think that's the only way you can actually get things accurate. You know, you go get a scoop of peanut butter for your oatmeal in the morning and you think it's 15 grams and it's like 45. So I think that just educating people, understanding like the fundamentals and then working from there.
For people listening, if that you're going, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. It's not forever. Mm-hmm. For most people, I find that if we start, and this is the progression, if you start with just that first week of getting curious and you are going to weigh and measure, because your eyeball is not like, I've discovered this with wine. You go out to dinner and you have a glass of wine. You're like, that's 5 ounces of wine. Oh my gosh. You know, it's like, so, you know, wine's a great example. I think most people can relate to, but you know, you weigh and measure. So you start to get that, you start to connect those dots. And once you do that piece of it, then I always have people focus on protein and making sure that they're getting the right amount of protein in at each meal and overall, because I find that if that's the first thing that you do and you eat it first, you start to, you are not as hungry. You're making better food choices, right? You're way more, you don't have the cravings. So that's where I like to start next. And then we start improving overall, like how many non-starchy vegetables are you getting? What are you doing for healthy fats? How's your fiber level? But we just start there. And, you know, you may find that you do that for a month and then you've got what you need. And then you just use it. You have it in your hip pocket if you start to gain weight, something starts to happen. I like to look at all the reasons you could be gaining weight, but I always go back to the fundamentals of tracking, because, you know, we could go down the rabbit holes of, is it, you know, cortisol? Is it sleep? Is it insulin resistance? But if you've just been eating too much healthy food's unhealthy. And so we got to look at the most obvious things first before we start to try to, you know, biohack our way into all these other things, when the thing may be you've just been eating a couple hundred extra calories a day unknowing, you know, because you weren't counting things in, right? Or you were putting too much olive oil on. And I was telling you offline about my husband. Last year, we went and got DEXA scans done, and or maybe it was a year and a half ago. Yeah. And his DEXA scan, now this is a guy who's always been athletic, always eaten healthy, and basically weighs what he weighs in high school. And he's now 50. He was 58 at the time. His body fat was 25%. I was so surprised because I figured he'd be somewhere at about 15%. I knew he wasn't super lean, but he was, you know, and super muscular, but he was in good shape. But 25% for someone who's athletic and eats healthy is way higher than you'd expect. And so I had him, and he'd been really resistant to tracking. He wasn't going to do it. I'm like, all right, well, let's just do this for a month. And in the first week, he was like, wow, he realized he wasn't getting in enough protein, and he was getting in way too many carbs and fat. Like, and by the way, we know the obesogenic formula is low protein, high carbs, high fat. Like, that's the worst combo that you can do. But he was doing things that you wouldn't think about. Like, he was at night having Siete chips with hummus and a handful of cashews. So all sound healthy, but not when, you know, at the expense of not getting enough protein in and getting too much of this in. Mm-hmm. So he made the shift, massively upped his protein. So he was eating a gram per pound of his target body weight, which then took him into, he was eating 3 to 4 meals a day. And he pumped up his weights at the gym and dropped 27 pounds of fat and put on 24 pounds of muscle. He literally is, and this is why it's so important to know your body composition as opposed to weight. It was a 3-pound weight shift. Mm-hmm. He is entirely different body. He looks like an entirely different person. He's never actually looked like this in his life. He is in better shape than he was in high school or college. Same weight, totally different body, right? So it is why we need to be able to look at body composition. And then we've got to look at what's really going on that, on the app to know, because again, you might be eating the right amount of calories, but you're protein deficient.
I was woefully deficient in protein until I started tracking, because I was taught by media basically that a calorie was a calorie was a calorie. And that was just the way that it goes. Like, you track your calories. If you're in a deficit, you'll lose weight. If you're in a surplus, you'll gain weight. Mm-hmm. At maintenance, you know, you'll stay there. Then I started working here alongside our nutrition scientist. She's amazing. Her name's Karen. I learned a lot about macronutrients. And I was like, I wonder how much protein I'm getting. I was getting like 40 grams of protein.
Oh, and
I know.
Not in a meal, right? Just throughout the day.
in total. And now I have 120 grams on average. And same thing, like, I didn't know until I knew. And just to the point that you made about your husband with like a 3-pound weight difference, I think people get so fixated on this number. And I do see that a lot in my role here. And I've heard a lot of our guests speak to that as well. People are like, I want to lose 15 pounds. And they have a vision of what their body will look like when they lose that amount of weight, when in actual fact, that might not be the case at all. You know, like in your husband's case, you say that he is looking fitter than ever, and it's 3 pounds. Like, I think that people just need to not be as fixated on a number and just more fixated on getting obviously adequate nutrition, and then focusing on like a strong body composition. A question I have for you, we're actually located in Canada. We don't have, I'm in a very small mountain town. I don't know where I would even be able to access something like a DEXA scan. And maybe some of our listeners are in the same boat, but I would love to understand my body composition better. Short of pulling out the calipers, do you have any recommendations?
Yes. First of all, when you do get into a big city, make a point to go get a DEXA scan, because it's going to be the most accurate. And then I'm going to give you the options you can do at home that will track the trends. But I say this because I have both a $5,000 segmental unit at home, and then I have the $100 unit I'm going to talk about. And, you know, the $100 unit reads me 10% higher than I am. Now, it's okay because I'm using this for the relative change. And what I want to look at is, as I'm working on shifting my body composition, am I going in the right direction? Am I dropping body fat while putting on lean muscle? And a body composition bioimpedance machine can tell me that. But once I go get a DEXA, then I'll be able to correlate them and really see the differences. So the DEXA Plus will give us bone mineral density they're not going to get from the home machine. Now, having said that, these home machines have gotten a lot better. And I think where they're the most inaccurate is when you have people who are kind of the extremes. So I happen to be an extremely lean female. And because of that, I think that's why it reads me so wrong, especially for being the age that I am. So you can buy, I'll give you a couple different names and why I like these so much. You can buy a Renpho scale, R-E-N-P-H-O, or an Oxaline Pro that got the highest ratings. And it's always on sale for $100. Why I like both of these is they have a Bluetooth component, so they will read to your phone and track your weight. And why this is important is you're tracking the trends over time. So it's going to give you, it looks at your total body water, and it's going to predict from that. And that's the important thing. It's predicting based on total body water, which means if you're more hydrated, it's going to look like you have better body composition. If you're dehydrated, it will actually make you look like you have worse body composition. So your hydration shifts. You might be dehydrated one day, more hydrated the next day. So that can impact it. So that's why you're looking for the trend over time, not the like what happened from yesterday to today. Because you're constipated, you're dehydrated, these things all shift the equation. But what the scales will tell you is your total body fat, your lean body mass, which is everything but fat. And it's going to then make some predictions about your visceral adipose tissue or the fat around your organs and your skeletal muscle mass. And again, you're going to look for those trends. I also love to do a tape measure with this because this is a good way to monitor your visceral adipose tissue, the fat around your organs, around your abdominal area. And there's a Bluetooth of that as well by Renpho, a Bluetooth tape measure, which is super cool and goes into an app. And what you want to do there is correlate your waist to height and your waist to hip and make sure that, I would say, if you're losing weight and you're not losing your waist, you could be making yourself worse, not better. One of the really important reasons that you want to, when you're in a caloric deficit, make sure that you're optimizing for protein is you want to make sure that you're holding onto or building fat-free mass, skeletal muscle mass, while you're dropping fat. And it is a thing that in the bodybuilding world for years was like, you can't do both. You either drop fat or build muscle. And they would have cycles where if you want to build muscle, you start to gain a little bit and then you would do these cutting phases. And I will tell you, granted, it is way easier to put on muscle in a caloric surplus and you'll put on more muscle, a little bit of fat, but you can actually put on muscle and drop fat at the same time. I've done it with enough people now. And in order to do that, you have to really make sure that you're prioritizing that protein, eating it first, getting a gram per pound of target body weight, and then getting into a little, I like to do a cycling caloric restriction. This is Bill Campbell's work out of University of South Florida, because you'll do like 5 days of caloric restriction, 2 days of maintenance calories, and it helps you hold on to and build lean tissue. But you can do it. And the more you have to lose, the higher your body fat, the easier it is to do this recomping. As you get close to goal, it gets harder, right? But it is possible to do.
One of the things I wanted to speak to you about is sugar and its impact on both like our body composition from a physiological level. I feel like you're an expert in sugar, and I feel like this is the expertise that I need. Can you speak to sugar intake?
And are you saying you need it personally?
I do, absolutely.
What is going on there?
I oftentimes joke that I don't have a sweet tooth, that I have sweet teeth. I think that growing up, I had a lot of sugar. Mm-hmm. And I think from what I understand, there could be newer science, but that it is more addicting than something like cocaine, according to some my studies that I've read about. So I started working with nutrition coach a couple years ago, and she was like, your sugar, added sugars, not, you know, not even like naturally occurring in fruits is quite high, and we need to get that down. But I feel like oftentimes my sweet tooth will rear its ugly head, and I'm someone, and I hope that some of our listeners are too, that is like very motivated by knowledge. So I'm hoping that you can give me some education that will have planted in my brain that will keep me on the straight and narrow.
There's some fun information here, and it's, I'm going to give you a different answer than I would have given you a year ago.
Great.
But first of all, so I always like to look at, okay, where is this coming from? And there's really three things. Number one would be stress. Sleep would go in there too, because stress is going to lower serotonin. It's going to make you crave more sugar. So that's one. And then number two is exposure. You know, the exposure equals preference. So the more sweet we eat, the more sweet we tend to want. And number three are genetics. And it's really interesting. I was on this reality show for a couple seasons called Freaky Eaters, and I did genetic testing on all of our people, because we had people that like had to have maple syrup with every single meal, like just weird stuff. And there turns out there are people with sweet tooths and sweet tasters. And there are people who the more sweet they eat, the more sweet they want. And it's really a big deal. Like it is a driver for them. Like I think they're probably very similar to the people that have the DRD2 gene that tend to be more addictive. So there is a clear genetic component to it. And I actually think that's way more than the exposure equals preference. Like growing up, I'm adopted, so I know this was not my genes. My mom clearly was one of those genetic sweet tooth people. She had ice cream, she had candy, she made cookies, like she had all this stuff stashed. I got sent my lunch every day. I always had dessert in it. Dinner every night, we always had dessert. And age 12, when I started to get really into performance because of what I wanted to do for, you know, my career, I stopped eating all sugar. You just stopped.
12. That's
at 12. Impressive. I was raised on Pop-Tarts and Captain Crunch, and I just stopped. I was like, yeah, I don't want this anymore. I'm not going to do this. Drove my mom nuts. Drove her nuts. She was like, and I was like, you know, and I'd been raised on all this around all the time, but I was like, yeah, you know, I weaned myself off, and I that's what I do in the sugar impact diet, is like wean you off. But most likely you have a little bit of that genetic sweet tooth, right? There's two ways to approach this. And what I did when I wrote Sugar Impact Diet, I was like, how do I take the people who have these sweet tooths and break them free of it? Mm-hmm. So what I did was really bump up their protein while I graded foods to lower their sugar impact, as I was bumping up protein, healthy fats and fiber that would improve satiety. And what I found is it took about 2 weeks, and I really got kicked out all sugar because I knew that that would light up their taste buds. And I used lemon juice with just a teensy bit of like stevia. I wanted to keep it sour because sour takes your sweet tooth away. So does fermented food. So it can be done, because that's what the sugar impact diet walks you through. However, there is a very interesting sugar out, and it's been out for years, but the FDA recently changed the way that you count the calories. So now it's a lot more popular because it doesn't really, it's negligent on calories, but it used to be that they said you had to count it as 4 grams per and then pull out net carbs, and it was too confusing. Mm-hmm. Now we know that it doesn't raise blood sugar, it doesn't raise insulin, and it doesn't contribute to calories. However, it raises GLP-1, and it, because of that, it lowers blood sugar. And in fact, I'll tell you which one it is in a moment, they've done some cool research where they have people take this sugar and then eat a candy bar, and their blood sugar still goes down because of that GLP-1 effect, where now you're bringing out the insulin to lower the blood sugar. So used to be, I was like, yeah, let's get it out. And I didn't like any type of sweet because I felt like it turned on your sweet wanting. However, I'm very gung-ho on this allulose product. Mm. And allulose is a rare sugar, and I think it's amazing. So much so that I don't have a sweet tooth, but I have been using it, putting it into things to get the GLP-1 effect. And I can tell I get the GLP-1 effect because I just feel full. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Like, I can feel the effect of this. And it's, you know, because I'll do one thing at a time. So I think there's really two approaches here. And my answer would be, you know, it's kind of a nuance as to which would work better, to either go through that process where you literally, I have people go from, you know, I have them assess their diet for low, medium, and high sugar impact foods, drop from swap high down to medium. So, you know, swap like orange juice for an orange or raisins for grapes. That would be the perfect example. Like high sugar impact food would be raisins. A medium sugar impact food would be grapes. A low sugar impact food would be blueberries, right? And you would just transition down. And then I'd have them get completely no fructose at all for 2 weeks, get rid of all the sweet, focus on sour and ferments and protein. And then, you know, you've basically broken free. But if you find that you can use allulose and allulose sweetened products and not go off the rails, it may also be the way. Like this company, RX Sugar, actually made these little things called Swealthy Sticks, which are allulose and fiber. And they have people use those with a meal to lower the blood sugar effect, and or right afterwards if you have that little, I need something sweet.
That might be worth looking into.
Right.
We actually do track allulose in Chronometer now. I think
I was so inspired because I looked at this when I started to look at this research. I'm like, huh, from what I can tell, you have to have like kind of maybe 0.1 to 0.2 grams per pound of body weight. It ends up being like 10 to 15 grams of allulose at each meal. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like how the heck am I going to do that? And I found their syrup. I'm like, maybe I can dump this in something. And so I was like, oh, wow, you can track allulose. This is cool. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth, you know, when you look at things, I love the line success leaves clues. And so you look at these GLP-1 agonists and what they're doing and you go, okay, but they're raising something that our body naturally produces, but probably has gotten really bad at producing because we've trashed our gut microbiome.
Yes.
So if we could do that naturally by using allulose, huh? Because, you know, protein, fat, fiber, exercise, they all raise GLP-1, but this really raises it.
Do you have any idea how it affects gut microbiome?
I don't know what it's doing to gut microbiome. I don't think it's not like something like Acromantia, you know, or different resistant starches, things that you really are using as prebiotics. I mean, it's not that where it's feeding and healing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's part of it. Like when you look at all of this, you go, how do I do the rehab? One of the things that I like to do when people start to get more involved in the app, of course, is to start to track fiber. And then to also just kind of look at how many different vegetables and fruits you get in a day. Now, I don't put vegetable and fruit in the same category. To me, you should have two fruits a day. That's it. Don't be a fruit piggy. You know, fruit's not a free food. And I'm really a big fan of berries. Like I do blueberries and blackberries every day. But with the vegetables, the attempt to get all these different colors and all these different types of non-starchy vegetables has been kind of a game for me, especially since it's really easy to get into a vegetable rut, you know, eat the same ones every single day. So that's one of the things we track and work on too.
One of the things that I tried recently that I was surprised that I love is I went out to a restaurant and instead of ordering a side of fries, they offer, I'm not sure if it was baked or broiled Brussels sprouts. Mm. And it was like lightly tossed with wasabi and honey of all things. And it was divine. Again, the sweet tooth. But I think it wasn't overpowering. And I was like, this is such a lovely alternative. And I came home and started making it myself because I was like, this is a hot take on a vegetable that I would never normally eat. And
just did that last night. We took Brussels sprouts with a teensy bit of olive oil and some red onion and a little bit of bacon and baked them until they got crispy.
They're so good.
So good. Unfortunately, I got to do a shout out. Watch out, because a lot of restaurants deep fry Brussels sprouts. And let me tell you, they are, if you go to a restaurant and order Brussels sprouts and they're like the most delicious thing ever, they're likely just, you've just deep fried them and you're just eating a bunch of bad oil, you know, or there's another place. We have an amazing barbecue place here in Florida that does these Brussels sprouts. And I'm like, it's just like Brussels candy.
Yes.
You got to be careful with these too.
100% you do. People are trying to make vegetables more palatable. I honestly love just straight up steamed broccoli, which is a strange thing to love as well. But there are things that I
love it with a little bit of grass-fed ghee, man. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's pretty delicious. One of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about, and this is obviously partly to do with your background in education, but also people who are just listening to this, I would encourage you to Instagram creep JJ, because you are in tremendous shape. You look wonderful. And I think that there's been a narrative for a really long time, specifically for women, less for men, although it is there, that aging is this decline in health. And I know that when I like go to the grocery store and I read the tabloids, it's like over 40, notice your belly fat.
Fall off a cliff.
pretty much. And I think for me, it's been tough because there is something that I'm getting a little bit vulnerable here, but I'm a little bit afraid to age. And it's not because of how I would look physically. It's I ask my body to do crazy things all the time. I'm a very active woman and I push routinely. And I feel like maybe when I'm older that I won't be able to have the same capabilities. And then every so often, I come across a woman like yourself, and it's just like, no, like that narrative. And I think society is, a lot of it is giving us this impression that youth is very important. And, you know, like even one of my coworkers got pregnant over the age of 35, and like it's a geriatric pregnancy.
That's bizarre. It's like, what?
And those are the things that we are consuming as women. And I just would love to talk to you about aging. Like, you obviously walk your talk, which I think is so important. And you're out there, you know, absolutely crushing it. Tell me what you're doing, please. How other people can feel this way, because I don't want women to think that like you're over 40 and then that's like the end of everything.
I will tell you that when you hit 50-ish, you'll look back and go, gosh, I wish I could have just jumped from 20 to this date, because it's so much better now. Okay, that's number one. Number two, what are the things that you would love to be doing in your 60s and 70s and 80s? What would you love to be doing?
Me personally?
You personally.
I would love to be hiking as much as I do, and running, and I mountain bike. I'd really like to just keep up my hobbies.
Cool. All right. So I look at that. I remember I was in Santorini a couple years ago with my husband, and we'd gone to like all the resorts are built into the hills and everything is stairs. And I thought, gosh, this is like the most amazing place, like prettier than they describe it. And I want to be able to be here when I'm 80, when I'm 90, which means I'm going to be hiking up and down these stairs. I love to hike. We hiked from Oya to Fila, I think, or Fira, whatever. We did this big hike and I love to hike. I love doing active stuff. And I do not intend to not be doing this, which means that I need to be training for that now.
Yes.
Like, that's what I look at. And I love the concept Dr. Peter Attia talks about the centenarian decathlon, is like what you want to be able to be doing, you know, when you're 100, we'll train for it now. And so that has been very, very top of mind. I used to live in Palm Springs, California, and I remember doing a consult with a new client. And I said, what are your goals? She goes, well, I want to make sure that I can keep wearing my stilettos. And I think she was in her 70s. And she goes, I want to be able to wear my stilettos and dance in my 80s. And I'm like, awesome. Okay. So, you know, what do we need to make sure that we're maintaining? Balance, stability, flexibility, strength and power and muscular endurance, and our VO2 max. So we got to train for all of those things now. And we especially, like, when you look at what happens as we age, and this is why I've really reframed everything to aging powerfully, is, yes, we lose muscle. We start to lose up to 1% a year. It starts around age 30, but it really, 40 up, it starts to double apparently at age 60. None of that has to happen. You will lose some, but you don't have to lose anything at the rate they're talking about. And I will tell you, I have, the same or more muscle mass now that I did in my 20s, and quality muscle. I'm lifting the same or heavier. So quality muscle, I'm doing pull-ups, et cetera. So that's number one, is we lose that. But the bigger challenge is not the muscle mass we're losing. It's actually the quality of muscle. It's the fact that we're losing more strength, like 2-4% of our strength each year, and 6-8% of our power. That's the problem. And that's fast twitch muscle fibers. We have fast twitch and slow twitch, and then these ones that can kind of go either way on our body. And it is use it or lose it. So if we, as we age, we're focusing on cardio and Pilates, and there's nothing wrong with those things, but if you're doing them exclusively, you're going to end up preferentially having more slow twitch and losing more fast twitch. You will slow yourself down. You will become weaker. You'll become slower. You don't want to exacerbate that. So you have to put more focus on strength exercises and power exercises, kettlebell swings and pull-ups and push-ups, hard stuff as you age. Because when you do hard stuff, your body adapts to it. And then you can do harder stuff and your body adapts to it, right? And this is the stuff that's going to protect you if you step off a curb wrong or do something where someone who's not in shape will fall and break a hip. This is the stuff that protects you. So no, I want to be able to do the crazy stuff that they say that you can't do. We went to Machu Picchu last year. And, we knew, first of all, we were going into major high altitude, but there was a hill called Huayna Picchu right next to Machu Picchu. And it is a straight up in a lot of places, no guardrails in altitude, right? So I'm looking at my husband and we're with a group and we're looking at this group and we go, we will beat you all. There were people there who were our age. And then there were people there who were 25. And I go, we will beat you all. Like,
you're at the top.
We started behind one of the guys who was mouthing off to us, who was big, fitness guy. And I go, watch this. Because we came down before him. He's like, what the heck just happened here? We train for this stuff. So whatever you want to be doing in your 70s and 80s, you better be doing more of that now, because you are laying down the foundation for everything you're going to be doing later. And then the bigger part of this is, don't listen to all this garbage out there. Mm-hmm. Look for the proof that you can get better with age. Look at the people for women, look at Dolly Parton.
Oh, yeah.
Dolly Parton. Like, I think Dolly Parton is like the big treasure. Here she is in a Dallas cheerleaders outfit in her 70s. Like, she's fabulous. Mm-hmm. So look at these people who are out there and flip the conversation. I think the most interesting people are people who have experience, who've lived, who have that wisdom, and that we need to flip the whole script in our country here in the United States. And I think it's the same in Canada, where it's ageist, mm-hmm. and people become invisible as they age. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's like, I've seen women like Christie Brinkley, I'm sure could walk into a room and get wolf whistles right now. Right. You can be amazing as you age. You can be, you're wiser. You've got way more life experience. You don't do as many dumb things because you've learned some lessons, right? You tend to dress better. You've got more time. And so it's actually a fantastic time. And your brain actually makes some changes in when you go through menopause. I learned this from Dr. Lisa Moscone, where you really you get to a point where all the stuff that you focused on, worried about, obsessed about in your 20s and 30s and 40s, you're like, could care less. They don't even register on your screen. It's a way cooler time.
I love hearing that. One of my biggest idols is actually my father, because my dad just turned like a week ago, 72, and he cross-country skis almost like 1500 kilometers a year in the winter, and road bikes. And nice. I'm so happy that my parents still go and do week-long canoe trips in Ontario, where they're portaging and canoeing. And I really have had very good inspiration. But then obviously, conversely, doing social media for a living and that kind of thing, have seen the opposite.
Don't let it into your psyche. Like,
yeah,
I just don't. I look for proof that you can get better with age. The and other you, stuff, I'm not going to listen to.
You are proof for me. You know, like, I definitely am inspired. There's someone else we partner with, Dr. Galveston, or she's the Galveston diet, Dr. Marie Claire Haber.
Claire.
And she also is like spreading a similar message, just in terms of, you know, like, aging is not like.
There's a lot of us out there, Dr. Gabrielle Lyons out there.
Yes.
Dr. Mark. Look at, I've known Mark Hyman for 25 years. I've known Mark Sisson for, I think, 35 years. And, you know, look at Mark Sisson. He's 70. He's amazing out there with what he takes his fat tire bike out onto the sand. I'm like, Mark, I'm not doing that. But, you know, and look at what Mark Hyman's out doing. Like, it's completely possible. And I'm having known these people for years. They're like having the best time of their life now.
Are you enjoying being part of the narrative that is like showing people what they are capable of?
Oh,
like,
heck yeah. I'm absolutely gung-ho going after it. And the only thing I ever hear as criticism is the one that one of my mentors early on taught me. She taught me there are no limitations. The only limitations are the limitations in your mind. Mm-hmm. And she taught me this other one. If you hear someone saying something kind of like giving you the reasons, like, it won't work, but it, just attach after that, so I don't have to. They're just trying to opt out. And so you'll hear people, oh, sure, it's easy for you, you know? And I'm like, no, it's not easy for me, you know? Or, oh, you've always been that way. I'm like, you know, no, anyone who is healthy and fit in their 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s is working for it.
Absolutely.
It's, I grew up with, you know, a mom and dad. My mom was active, golfed 3 times a week, did all the housework, lived in, you know, in a house where she went up and down the stairs all the time, didn't do like regular exercise, walked every day, just, but was very, very active. Mm-hmm. My dad ate a bunch of garbage, and she was very careful about her diet. Dad ate a bunch of garbage, totally stressed out, drank too much, smoked, you know, a train wreck, right? Dad has a high blood pressure, like, just health challenge after health challenge after health challenge, dies in his early 70s of lung cancer. Not surprising. Mom dies last year at 93, boop, goes out like a light bulb.
93.
You know, completely functional until that time, totally like driving her car, doing her own groceries, like, was really a pain during COVID when I'm like, Mom, you know, knock it off. You have to, you can't do it. But, you know, every day out for walks and very, very active and very cognitively fine, everything, right? It's a choice. Like, you look at that and go, you saw the cautionary tale. Here was one way of living life. Here was the other way of living life. Choose wisely.
Yeah, I think about that a lot too. I've said that we obviously don't have a crystal ball that would know how long we live if we were making choices that were less good for ourselves. But when people are giving me a hard time about tracking, and like, I have very like dialed sleep hygiene. I really prioritize sleep when I'm leaving, you know, a party early, and people are like, oh my gosh, early bedtime.
Oh,
and
I'm like, I'm got to get that group that like does that.
Yeah,
that's normal, right?
Totally. Totally. And I'm like, no, like, I'm a better person when I sleep more. And, you know, my weight has been stable for really long time now. So I'm not like training to lose weight or anything. And people are like, why would you be tracking then? Like, what is the benefit for you? And I'm like, I'm thinking of Elisa 30, 40 years down the road, and hoping that the things that I'm doing now are going to make sure that I'm healthy for a long time. And I think that in itself is reason enough to track. Everyone has a why, and that's mine, is because I just want to be an Energizer Bunny, hopefully forever.
Well, it will also help you. During COVID, I started gaining a pound a day. And this went on for like 10 days before I ran into my friend, my girlfriend, who's my doctor. And I go, okay, something's very off. Like, the first couple of days, I was like, wow, stress. And I went, okay, this is not. And I had an autoimmune thing flare up. And so I could look back, like, when you have those situations, you will be able to look and go, okay, I can totally connect the dots quickly and see, well, nothing changed here, nothing changed here, right? So these things are all super helpful. And then you can like improve things in real time. I just was talking to a guy yesterday who got diagnosed with diabetes. Like he went in because he said, well, diabetes doesn't happen overnight. You went into the doctor, got diagnosed, but you didn't get diabetes last week. What's been going on? Like, what has everything been looking like when you've gone to the doctor over the last 10 years? He goes, I never went. I had not gone to the doctor for 10 years and I just was progressively gaining weight and getting more tired. And I'm like, wow, you know? So, you know, I think it may be hard for people in their 20s and 30s to kind of relate to this unless they have a specific goal, like I want to lose weight or I want to recomp my body or I want to put on muscle. But when you start to look at this, and it's really hard in your 30s. In my 30s, I wasn't going, gosh, I want to be able to hike a mountain at 80. It did not register on my screen. It didn't really register on my screen until like 2 years ago as I was coming into like turning 60. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to put as much muscle on as I humanly can and really make sure my VO2 max is cranked. And, you know, what do I need to do? So your age is really when you need to be thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Don't wait till you're, you know, thankfully I've always been into fitness, but ideally, whatever age you start to take it on as you're listening to this, if that's right now, great. But the sooner, the better. But now is fantastic, right? Now is perfect.
One of my favorite quotes is the best time to start anything is 20 years ago. And the second best time is today. And exactly. whenever I'm talking to someone, I'm like, I'm learning so much already. I have two more questions for you. One is just personal. You get your VO2 max tested. What does that entail? Just because so
I have not. It's funny. I've connected up moving to Tampa. I've connected up with the scientists over at University of South Florida. They have an amazing exercise science department with incredible people there. Dom D'Agostino, Bill Campbell, Lane Norton, all these people are there. I'm not really connected with Lane, but I'm connected with Bill Campbell and Dom D'Agostino. So I am going over there to do my VO2 max. However, in the interim, and I say this because, you know, if you don't have access to a DEXA, you probably don't have access to going testing your VO2 max. However, all you need to do is go online and look at how you can do this easily by doing like a 12-minute Cooper test. There's different ways to do it on a track or on a treadmill that will give you a predicted VO2 max. No, it is not quite as good as going to the lab, but you know what? It's good enough. Just like you can order from Amazon a grip strength hand grip dynamometer and figure out this is a great proxy for overall strength, just like the VO2 max. The VO2 max is the number one way to test kind of your, it's the number one thing linked with like all-cause mortality. And it's the most important metric to improve for overall health. But grip strength is right there with it. And then you can do like a simple stand up with your feet crossed, sit down, stand back up and see what you need to do that. If you only have to stick out a hand, then you're still in the good category. But if it requires like two hands and feet and everything to get yourself back up again, you know, we've got some flexibility and stability work to do.
There is a center 2.5 hours away that tests VO2 max, and I would love to get it done.
You should take your parents too.
My dad would probably blow me out of the water, honestly.
How cool is that?
I do actually run a lot, so I'm hoping that would translate, but I'm just looking at, it looks like you would wear an Apple Watch as well. I wear an Apple Watch, and just like my heart rate and stuff when I'm training more, I'm just so fascinated to know how that translates to like my lung capacity and that kind of thing. So my last question for you, I always end the podcast with, is if you have one piece of information that our listeners could action today, what is the number one thing you would recommend people doing for their health?
Well, it's tracking. So I always start everything with tracking, whether you're tracking your activity. You know, so much of us, we focus on the 30 minutes of exercise and like track your activity. So it's tracking your nutrition, tracking when you eat, tracking your hydration, tracking your steps, but you don't necessarily need to do all of it at once. Start with one that you want to focus on. What's your priority right now? And once you've got that one nailed, then what's the next priority? So I'm a big fan of all of these trackers. They've made it amazing because what you measure and monitor, you can improve.
100% agree. Where can people find you?
So jjvirgin.com has got my podcast, Well Beyond 40. We've got a Eat Protein First 7-Day Challenge to help you that involves the chronometer app to help you get the right amount of protein in. It's got a protein calculator associated with it. And then it's got my YouTube channel where I've got been putting out a bunch of stuff on like how to start a resistance training routine. So everything's there, plus great recipes.
Perfect. I will link all of that in the show notes for our listeners. And I know you're a very busy woman. You got an awesome message to spread, and we're happy to be part of your community. And so thank you so much for making the time to be here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day. A massive thank you to JJ for being on our podcast and for helping spark this movement for women to age powerfully. I know it's a message so many of us truly need to hear. If you love this episode, please make sure you subscribe to our podcast for future episodes. And I can't wait to see you next time.